Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs in the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stocks.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome again to another live edition of Wall Street Unspun. This is Peter Schiff, the host for the next hour, president of Euro Pacific Capital. This show can be heard live every Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time, both on shortwave radio, 5.070 megahertz, and my website at www.europac.net. Also, if you have any friends that want to listen or you want to listen another time, it's also aired on Saturday evenings in a rebroadcast at 11:30 Eastern, 8:30 Pacific Time on shortwave radio 9.32 megahertz. And again, all of the previous episodes, if anybody wants to go back and listen to the older episodes, and I certainly encourage you to do that, you can do that at www.europac.net in the archive section. And, you know, I don't doctor these up. I mean, they're there the way they are. And I want people to be able to hear the predictions when they're made so they can appreciate the accuracy of the advice that they've been given over the past 2 years. And, again, the number to call, the lines are open. I invite your calls, is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Now, speaking of accurate recommendations, we had a phenomenal week today in the markets for the investments that I have been buying for Euro Pacific Capital clients. I mean, first of all, the stellar performer so far in the last week since our last broadcast has been natural gas prices, which have surged probably 40% in the last week, 60% in the last 2 weeks. And, of course, we've seen a huge jump in the value of the oil and gas trusts in Canada that we have been buying, that I have been encouraging my clients and listeners of this broadcast to buy for the last several months because natural gas prices were way too cheap. And they got that way because of the glut of supply resulting from the milder winter that we had last season. Going into the winter, we built up quite a supply. There wasn't demand for it, and there was a drop. And, you know, there was a short squeeze, and or rather, people who were long had to cover, shorts piled in, and, you know, but the price was ridiculously low. Now the prices are soaring very quickly, and I expect that to continue. I think natural gas is headed a lot higher. The oil and gas trusts that are heavily weighted to natural gas, while off their lows, certainly, you've missed the opportunity to buy the lows, but there's still a lot of value in these stocks. So if you haven't already done so, you know, it's not too late. I mean, better timing would have been last week or the week before, but we can't turn back the clocks, and the prices, I don't think, are going back down there. So if you want to get into these natural gas stocks, do it. You know, I've got brokers in my office now in California and in the Connecticut office, but you can call right now to get your orders in for tomorrow morning. You know, don't wait. And I think these stocks are going a lot higher. They still haven't moved anywhere near to reflect the price of natural gas. But you can call the Newport Beach office at 800-993-8350, 800-993-8350. And you can call the Connecticut office at 800-727-7922. I know there are brokers in both offices, so give them a call and, you know, add to these positions tomorrow morning. Some of the factors that are driving the price of natural gas, one is the heat wave. I mean, I'm here in Connecticut. It was 102 degrees driving home from work today. In fact, I had to turn the elevators off in my building. The city called where I live, and they said you have to turn off all essential and non-essential electrical, you know, to conserve power. So I had to walk up four flights of stairs. But This is causing tremendous demand for natural gas. Also, we've got a hurricane forming in the Caribbean, Hurricane Chris, potentially going into the Gulf, which might disrupt supply. You've got prices rapidly moving back to higher levels. A lot of these natural gas trusts had reduced their dividends as recently as 2 months, two weeks to a month ago. A lot of these same trusts that cut their dividends because natural gas prices were so low will now be raising them back up again. So you definitely want to be positioned before this happens, because those dividend hikes will certainly draw attention to these stocks. And you remember, a lot of these stocks are rising off of very depressed levels. So despite the fact they might have moved by 10 or 15% in the last week, they're still cheap. They're still cheap, and they should be bought. Also, we've had 8 consecutive up days in gold and silver. 8 consecutive days. Silver was up another 40 or 50 cents today. We're back above $12 an ounce. The market looks good. Gold is back above 650. I've been talking about the technical outlook. In fact, I was quoted in a Bloomberg or a Reuters piece last week, in which I said the short-term outlook for gold looked very compelling. The technicals are strong, and I looked for a rally up to 670, possibly within a week. And, you know, it didn't happen within the first week, but it looks like it'll happen within this week. But I was right on with my call about the technicals, and I think the technicals look great. The technicals look great for silver in particular, but gold too. I think, you know, those of you who are waiting to buy dips, I know we still have a lot of money on the sidelines at the Perth Mint. A lot of people have been waiting for dips, and we've been encouraging clients not to wait. In my opinion, we've had the dip. We're going for new highs. If you're on the sideline, if you're still waiting for 500 gold or $8 silver, stop waiting. I don't think we're going back down there. Just pull the trigger, buy your metals, because I think if you don't buy them now, you're going to pay much, much higher prices for them in the not-too-distant future. So, again, call up any of the brokers that you're working with, or call Danny Dwyer in the California office, 800-993-8350, 800-993-8350. If you're still sitting on cash at the Perth Mint, you know, put it to work, get out of cash, and get into metals. And if you don't have an account, you know, call her up and ask her how to set one up. This is a bull market, I think. Gold and silver prices are going higher. And I think one of the big catalysts for this move is going to be the potential pause by the Federal Reserve next week. I still think that they're going to hike one more quarter point to 5.5, but I think that the pause is going to be on. Potentially, they won't even hike. They'll pause already at 5.25. Either scenario, I think, is negative for the dollar. I think the only thing that's been holding up the dollar has been these progressive interest rate hikes. Once that support is gone, look out below. The dollar looks very weak. It's traded very weak. And I also think that, you know, interest rates, sure, long-term bonds have backed off because they're anticipating a pause. But I think once there is a pause, people are going to start to appreciate the true inflation risks that are out there, and the fact that the Fed is now no longer fighting the inflation as if it ever were. But if it's no longer raising rates, the inflation is going to continue to get worse and worse and worse. That's going to undermine the demand for U.S. Treasuries. They're going down. If anybody hasn't figured out that the housing bubble has burst, they've got to be living in a fantasy land. It's amazing to me that people are still buying homes, but there are still people, a few fools out there, that haven't put two and two together yet. But this is rapidly coming. We had some news today. Mortgage applications are at a 4 or 5 year low. You have record supply of unsold homes on the market. You have record amounts of homes still under construction, waiting to come on the market. You know, you've got record amount of homes sitting vacant. They're not even on the market yet, but they're vacant. There's nobody living in them. They're going to be on the market. This collapse is going to make the NASDAQ collapse, you know, look like a Sunday school picnic. And people who think that real estate can't collapse because, you know, there's no speculation like there was in stocks, I mean, if that isn't denial, I don't know what is. And since real estate is so highly leveraged, it can collapse a lot worse than the stock market did. And, of course, the ramifications for the economy are far deeper, because people weren't, you know, borrowing against their stock portfolios to this extent and using it to take vacations and to buy big screen TVs and SUVs and to remodel kitchens. You know, you didn't have all that consumption. Sure, there were probably some people that margined their stocks and spent the money, but I think most people who margined stocks during the stock market bubble used the money to buy other stocks. They didn't use the money to buy a television set or take a vacation. they probably used it to leverage up their portfolios. That wasn't the case with real estate. But anyway, let me quickly, we've got one caller on the line, Noah calling from California. Go ahead.
God bless you for always telling the truth about financial markets, Peter Schiff. My question is, there's been rumors circulated that when gold got above 700, the U.S. government, this is a quote from a senator apparently, the U.S. government ordered the price down and dumped a large several hundred tons on the market. I'm curious if you give credence to those rumors or unverifiable quotes, or what you think about
it? There's rumors circulating about manipulation in the gold market, and you know, I always am very suspicious about the sources of those rumors and whether or not they're true. There's no doubt in my mind that you know certain people in the government who are smart understand that surging gold price is a problem, and you know, it's again, it's I compared it to the canary in the financial coal mine. And, you know, if, let's assume your goal is to gas the miners and kill them, you know, you certainly would want to try to keep the canary alive long enough for that to happen. Because if they saw what happened to the canary, they might wise up and get out of the mine. And so, you know, the U.S. government, you know, wants to keep this bubble economy going. They want to keep foreigners buying our bonds. And, you know, to the extent they can keep gold from rising and flashing a warning sign, they can keep that scheme going. But whether or not they actually have the wherewithal to dump that kind of gold on the market, and if they did do it, I have no clue. And it really doesn't matter. I mean, because, you know, if the government is going to start selling their gold at 700, you know, that's even more bullish for gold, because the more gold they sell, the more gold they're going to have to buy back at much higher prices. The U.S. government, if it were smart, would be accumulating as much gold as they can while it's still so cheap. Hello? I think we might have lost the caller. Is the caller still there? Jason, are we still on the air? But in any event, yeah, I mean, the key right now, I mean, anybody who's smart, any governments who are smart, individuals, gold is extremely cheap right now. Gold is real money. It will be real money again. I mean, it is currently not functioning as money because it is not circulating as a medium of exchange, but that will change. And I think right now, I mean, the key is to accumulate as much gold as you can before, you know, its real monetary role reemerges, because when that happens, it's going to be a lot more expensive. You know, and so you definitely want to buy it now. And, you know, I'm looking at gold and silver, and as the gold and silver ratio, and silver looks like it's breaking out once again to gold, and that's a very bullish sign. You know, I think that, you know, if silver is starting to gain ground against gold, it's bullish for both the metals. And that's been happening recently. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, sure, the government is obviously disturbed by the price of gold rising, and they will do what they can to try to talk it down. I mean, speaking about talk, I mean, I happened to watch on CNBC the other day, they interviewed Hank Paulson, who, you know, is the Secretary of Treasury. And, I mean, I don't know if anybody saw this interview. If you saw it, you want to give me a call. If you had the same feeling that I did when I watched it. But again, the number to call, the lines are open. The number to call is 888-678-9597. 888-678-9597. Anyway, Maria Bartiromo was interviewing him, and all of a sudden Maria asked him a question relating to the dollar and how low he was prepared to allow the dollar to drop to resolve some of our current account imbalances or something like that. And basically, I looked at his face, and the way he responded, and he basically really ignored her question, but he heard the word dollar, and he all of a sudden came out with like a rehearsed, prepared speech, almost like a robot or a parrot, and he said, Maria, let me reiterate that a strong dollar is in the national interest of the United States, that we are determined to allow the dollar's exchange rate to be set by the marketplace. I mean, it was like, you know, he all of a sudden like became a robot. And he basically said almost verbatim, word for word, what his past two or three predecessors had said. And it was like, you know, he heard the word dollar, and then all of a sudden it was like a reflex. Like he knew to say this thing. And even though what he said didn't specifically address her question or really answer it, and it just shows how ridiculous this was. If anybody saw this, if they got the same reaction, that he, you know, he turned into a robot. The way he answered this thing, like it was reflexive and rehearsed. But of course, you know, as soon as he said it, I was watching the foreign exchange markets, and as soon as he said it, the dollar did tick up a bit. I mean, it was a noticeable uptick. But by the end of the day, the dollar had lost all that it gained in response to that, and quite a bit more. Because even before Paulson spoke, the dollar was stronger on the day, and then it got even stronger, but then it ended up, you know, sharply lower. And gold was up about $12 that day. And when Paulson made his speech, it might have been up $2 or $3. So, you know, if that's his strong dollar policy, it certainly didn't work. And of course, you know, what's so inconsistent about it, and no one picks up on it, is first he says, we favor a strong dollar. And then in the same breath, he says the dollar's exchange rate should be determined in the market. Well, what I would have asked him if I was Maria, I would have said, well, Mr. Paulson, what happens if the market lowers the dollar? If in the open market the dollar becomes weak? How do you square that with your strong dollar policy? And what would you do to counteract a weakening dollar if the market, you know, because if he just thinks the dollar should be determined by the market, then he's not, you know, I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Then also, in the same, not the same breath, but probably, you know, within the same 2-minute span, he also called for the Chinese government to appreciate the yuan against the dollar. Well, by definition, making the yuan go up is making the dollar go down. So how can you simultaneously call for a strong dollar and a weak dollar at the same time? Because the yuan going up is the dollar going down. I mean, it's the other side of the seesaw. I mean, so these guys talk out of both sides of their mouths, and nobody calls them on it. I mean, it's just, the bottom line is all they're doing is talking. All they're doing is a big confidence game. This is a huge bubble. It's going to burst. And all these guys, they're there to do. People like Paulson or Bernanke, their job is to go out there and spread the propaganda and tell everybody how great things are, how wonderful the U.S. is, how vibrant our economy is, how strong our economy is, how great things are, how they've never been better, and ignore all the truth and just hope that all this bull will allow them to win the next election cycle. We'll keep the economy going long enough for everybody to get reelected one more time. Anyway, I got another caller on the line from Chicago. Go ahead, Ryan Golder. I got your name wrong. Hello? Reginald? Is Chicago on the line? Jason, do we have a caller, or am I on the line? Can the caller hear me? Anyway, I thought I had a caller on the line, but I'm not getting a response.
Hello?
There he is. Go ahead. This is Peter Schiff. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. It's very nice to meet you over the phone. I had a general statement and question. I believe you follow the Austrian School of Economics, and I also follow it, too. And my statement regarding the central banks, your statement regarding that they'll change your procedures. And what I can see or read, they're socialist entities, so they will never care about profits. So they, in likelihood, may just always purchasing these dollars to artificially deflate their currencies. And my question was more of, do you see it possible as the market, via these the lower currency in renminbi and yen, forcing our government to take action in form of protectionism or so forth? And if that's true, what do you see from there?
Well, I mean, what's going to happen? I mean, you've got a lot of foreign central banks that, you know, that believe that it is in their own political interest to prop up the dollar. And so they're willing to do so. And they're willing to sacrifice their citizens' standard of living and their purchasing power in an effort to prop up the dollar. Now, I think that's foolish and misguided, but obviously that's what they believe. Now, as soon as, particularly in Asia, but also in Europe, as soon as foreign politicians believe that it is not in their interest to artificially support the U.S. consumer and the U.S. economy, they will stop doing it. You know, there's no question that they will. They will do what's in their interest. At some point, and I think that point is going to come soon, they will come to that conclusion. because basically the cost of supporting the United States escalates each and every year. And so every year they go deeper and deeper into this thing and they commit more and more money. And at some point, you know, after years of throwing good money after bad, and every year you're asked to throw more and more money in to that void, you know, you come to your senses. And I think we're close to that point. I mean, the U.S. government is going to try to continue to send out the message that the world cannot afford to let us go broke, that the only thing standing between them and poverty and chaos and unemployment is our ravenous consumption. But once they figure out that this scam and are convinced that they're better off letting us collapse than continuing to support us, they will do that. And I think, as I said, I think that's going to happen soon. I think it could happen as soon as next year. You know, I mean, it might happen in 08 or 07, but that would be my best guess. I mean, 07 or 08, I think it's over. And, you know, you need to be prepared. It's possible that it can happen before the end of this year. I don't know. But it's really going to be hitting the fan. Everything, we're going to have the perfect storm. It's brewing. It's out there. It's not, you know, Char, whatever that star's name is, Chris. But there's a perfect financial storm is brewing, and it should be in the United States by next year.
All right. Well, and do you have any other comment regarding our government in terms of the elections and so forth, that, you know, the Democrats versus the Republicans, if they take any action?
I don't know. I mean, the Democrats and the Republicans are both responsible for, you know, for the policies that have led us to this mess in the first place, and I don't know which one is more or less likely to do the right thing. I mean, you know, it's hard for me to say. I mean, you would normally think the Republicans would be better than the Democrats, but, you know, I'm not willing to make that stretch. I mean, they're both so bad that I don't know that either party is going to do the right thing. I mean, you know, you would think that it would be the Republicans, but, you know, the Republicans have been in charge for the past, I don't know how many years now, and they've done nothing but make the problem worse. You know, voting Republican isn't going to do anything.
I mean,
you could vote Libertarian, but of course the Libertarians aren't going to win.
Yes.
So I don't know that there's anything we can do at the ballot box. All we can do is protect our own wealth and hope that when we get this major economic collapse, that, you know, we don't, you know, make a significant veer to the left. I mean, a lot of things can happen. I mean, look, you know, Adolf Hitler rose to power in Germany as a result of the hyperinflation and the problems during the, you know, in the Weimar Republic. And, you know, I mean, when you have that type of economic despair and hardship, you know, it's ripe for those types of, you know, people to rise to power in the way they can vilify and blame others or speculators. So I don't know. I mean, I doubt that we would be in a situation to have another Adolf Hitler, but, you know, we could certainly move in the wrong direction, the direction towards totalitarianism, towards more government, towards bigger government, towards more controls and less freedom in response to this crisis. And I certainly hope that we don't move in that direction. I hope that we move in the opposite direction. We move away from government, and hopefully government gets a lot of the blame for this. I don't know if that's going to happen. I'm hopeful that we can become a freer country. We'll certainly be a poorer country, but a freer country means we have a chance to be rich again. But it's not going to happen overnight, and it's not going to happen without a lot of work and a lot of sacrifice by a lot of Americans.
Very informative.
All right, well, thanks for listening. Are you a client?
No, I'm just a small investor who listens.
Well, if you want to be a big investor, then you need to start out by being a client. So when you get off the phone with me, you should pick up the phone and call up our office. Either you call Phoenix or call California or call Connecticut. In fact, let's play a quick commercial right now. If you don't have the number, the number will be in the commercial.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro-Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
We're back. And anyway, this is Peter Schiff. The lines are open. Call toll-free 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. I'd specifically like to get calls from anybody else who saw the Paulson interview on CNBC with Maria Bartiromo, if they had the same opinion as me with respect to the way he answered that question on the dollar. Anyway, there are two reasons that I do this radio show. I mean, basically, there's two primary reasons. One is to talk to the clients. I have a lot of clients at Euro Pacific Capital, most of whom I don't get a chance to communicate with personally, certainly not on a weekly basis, if even, you know, semi-annually. I've got a lot of clients, and I've got a lot of other brokers, a lot of competent brokers in four offices, nationwide, to talk in my place. But this radio show is an opportunity for my clients to tune in once a week and hear my thoughts directly, as opposed to hearing them through the mouths of other brokers. And it also gives people the opportunity to call in and ask me questions, in such a way that other people can benefit from hearing both the question and the answer. But the second reason for my doing this weekly show is to try to reach out to people who are not clients, who might hear this show, and to convince them to become clients. And if you're listening to the radio show, if you have been listening to it, and you're not yet a Euro Pacific Capital client, then I've failed as far as you're concerned, because if you're not a client, you're not getting my point. I mean, this is very serious stuff. The most important thing that you could do is protect your wealth and do it now. And I wrote my last commentary about patriotism and is what I'm doing unpatriotic. And the most patriotic thing I can do is to make sure as many Americans as possible have real wealth, have real assets, whether it's foreign stocks or precious metals. We need these things. We can't all be holding on to worthless dollars. We don't want everybody in America to go broke. We need to secure as many assets as we can in the hands of Americans, particularly Americans who understand economics, who understand the mess that we're in, because the more of those types of people who have money and have wealth, the better off we're all going to be, because we want wealth in the hands of people who will know how to invest it and how to use it properly to help rebuild this country, not simply squander it. So if you're listening to this show, if you've been listening to it and you don't yet have an account, you got to do it. You got to pick up the phone, you got to call Euro Pacific Capital, and you got to start getting your financial house in order before it's too late. Because it will be too late. One day it's going to be too late. And it's not years and years into the future. It's very soon it's going to be too late. Very soon, I'm not going to be looking for new clients. Because if you're not a client, you probably don't have any money. Once the dollar collapses, your dollars aren't going to do me any good. No matter how many you send me, we're not going to be able to buy any foreign stocks, because you're not going to be able to afford them. At that time, basically, Euro Pacific Capital is going to have a second stage. This stage is where I'm going around the country, gathering as many clients as I can, and getting real assets, getting real wealth, helping people protect their wealth by getting it out of the dollar. The next phase is going to be helping my clients, hopefully, repatriate the money they protected back into the U.S. market when things are dirt cheap. And so right now it's all about getting as many new clients as I can on board. Once the dollar collapses, then I'm just working with the clients I've got, because really, there really won't be that many new client potentials out there. I'll mainly be working on helping the clients I already have on board more effectively manage the wealth that I've helped them to protect and preserve. So if you want to get into this, get into this lifeboat before the ship you're on sinks, you got to do it, and you got to do it soon. So call the number, 800-727-7922. Talk to a broker. They're there to help you. and help me accomplish my goal of this show. Anyway, we've got two callers on hold. Let's take the first
one. Dial your operator.
We must have lost somebody.
N-C-N-V.
Can we hang up that phone? Well, let me. Do we have Dan on the line from Ohio? What about Steve from Toronto?
I'm here. This is Steve from Toronto.
All right, Steve. We must have lost Dan. Go ahead, Steve.
Oh, hi. You were talking about Poulsen earlier.
Huh?
And you were talking about Poulsen. I saw that segment too, and I thought I was listening to Jon Snow with a different voice.
Yeah, I mean, but did you see the way how non-responsive his answer was actually to her question? It just
yeah.
The question involved the word dollar, and as soon as he heard it, it's like a little switch went off, right? And all of a sudden, he went into like autopilot.
Yeah, and it kind of it was hard to catch, but he did. It did kind of say, and let the markets, kind of decide where it's going to trade sort of thing. But he did kind of said that a little quietly. But he, I just thought it was Jon Snow.
Yeah, it's like, well, what if the market decides that it goes down?
Yeah.
You okay with that? Because you just said you wanted it to be strong.
Yeah, like we want a strong dollar, but the market will decide where it trades.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
But the one thing I thought was interesting was I think that was the other day. So today would have been the meeting of the, what do they call it? The running or the committee for running of the markets, which to me is the manipulation team. So I don't know what they'd be talking about today. Probably something shiny, you know. So, but anyways, did you see your old pal Joe today?
Who?
Joe Bagletagia.
Oh, on CNBC? No, I didn't get to watch him.
Oh, well, he sounded a lot more cautious, talking more about inflation and everything today.
Maybe all this bull bear debate with me is finally sinking in.
Yeah, well, he kind of caught me by surprise, because right at the end he said, and we're still with our goal positions.
Well, you know, that's not true. Well, because the last time I saw him, he said that he got out of gold.
Yeah, I know. So I guess with gold being up all these days,
Yeah, it seems to me then that he's just talking. When gold's going up, he says he's in it. When it's down, he says he's out of it.
Yeah. So that's about a, yeah, other than that, I don't have,
I got very encouraged that last time that I was on. It's still on my website. You can see him saying he's out of gold. Because we were both there, and when he said that, he thought the gold rally was over and they got out of their gold positions, I was like, I was happy about that. I finally felt that the market could rally now that we got rid of him.
Yeah.
So that's on my website. You can see him admitting that he's out.
Yeah, I said,
when did he get back in? I'd like to say, Joe, when the hell did you get back in?
Yeah, true. Well, just one more comment on gold. I do believe in the gold manipulation thing, but I think it affects traders more than it does long-term investors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because
yeah, I mean, long-term investors. Look, I've always said the best thing for long-term for our my clients is this manipulation, because it gives more people an opportunity to buy it cheaper.
Yeah.
That's why I could never understand that the Gatta suit against Barrick, where they were trying to sue them for depressing the price of gold. And I said, well, but they did you a favor. If they depressed it, you got to buy it cheap.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make any sense, because they were saying we were buying gold and we want to sue Barrick for making it cheap. Well, that's a good thing. I mean, it would be a better suit if they had made it expensive and you had bought it.
Oh, yeah, true.
That means you got a better price. So it didn't make any sense. I used to say, look, let them manipulate it.
But,
the more they manipulate it, the more, I mean, I own a lot of gold stocks today. I mean, I own a ton of them myself.
Right.
I bought a lot of these stocks in 99 and 2000, 2001. I never would have gotten these stocks if gold hadn't been so cheap. I couldn't have afforded them back then. So it helped me out as a buyer.
Yeah, true enough. Yeah, and that natural gas, rallying up the way it is, boy, they can sure use a lot of it in the summertime too, eh? It's been hot, very, very hot.
And you know what? We'll probably look. I mean, we had a very mild winter last winter. I'm sure that's not going to be the case every year, and we'll probably get a cold winter. I mean, look, we don't have the supplies, we don't have the storage facilities. We've underinvested in all the infrastructure and all the exploration. I mean, we've blown all our money on consumption. We didn't invest it where we should have.
Yeah. Actually, I don't know if I'll be up early enough, but I just saw on the schedule on CNBC tomorrow that Professor Ikomadidis is on. He's a oil analyst. An oil analyst.
There's some one of the women that I debated that's on my website, that Diana Swank.
Yeah.
Are on again. She's on all the time. There, she knows nothing. I mean, she's clueless.
Oh, I know. After you listen to that,
her opinion on what the economy is going to do, what this, she's like, she doesn't know anything.
Well, you get more ideas listening.
Well, I might as well put my 4-year-old son on CNBC. He can answer the questions as well as she can. He knows because he knows as much about economics as she does.
Oh yeah. Yeah, true enough. You get more ideas listening to your show for an hour, or maybe Favavio for an hour, than you do on that show for a week. You know,
week. I mean a year, except when I'm on.
Yeah. Well, they do have some good guests. Like I say, there are a few of them. Guests. But
Eckenstein comes on once in a while. David Tice comes on, once in a while. Sometimes there's people on there that know what they're talking about, but most of the time, they don't, or if they do know what they're talking about, they're afraid to say what they really believe.
Yeah, true enough.
They don't want to be labeled Dr. Doom like me.
Yeah, Professor Ikomadidis on the oil. We're two major headlines away from $100 oil.
I mean, we're almost at 80. We're at 76, so.
Yeah, two major headlines. That's what he's been saying for a while before we ever got up.
You know, 100 isn't some magic number, like that's all it's going to go to. I've been predicting the ultimate top of this market would be 150 to 200. And I don't think we're going to get there at the current exchange rate for the dollar. I think when the oil is 150 to $200 a barrel, the dollar index will be somewhere between 40 and 60. And right now it's about 85. So the dollar is going to get clobbered, and that's what's going to drive oil to 150 to $200.
Does the high price oil create demand for dollars?
I don't think so.
No? Oh.
No, I mean, because people have plenty of them. So, I mean, there's more, And what happens, though, is it used to be that it would create demand for treasuries, because as OPEC earned all these dollars and they kept them, they would buy treasuries. But more and more, as OPEC is earning dollars, they're taking the dollars and selling them to buy other currencies.
Yeah. Actually, when you were talking about the housing market, there was a guy on CNBC, and I didn't catch who he was. They showed him a couple of times saying that about housing, that he says you better lower your price now to sell it, because what we expect after Labor Day, that the inventory is just going to...
Oh, yeah, look, I've been telling people, if you want to sell your house now, just lower the price by 20%. Let somebody think they're getting a bargain.
Yeah.
Not, they're still overpaying, but you might get out. There's still a few suckers. And I said this. If you read my writings from 6 months ago, when everybody was saying, wait till the summertime, things are going to pick up, it's a slow season, I said, no. I said, wait till the summer, because nothing's going to sell. I know a lot of people didn't want to put their houses on the market until the summer because they didn't think they'd sell. Everybody was waiting for the summer for buying to pick up. There is no buying. It's just a glut of houses on the market, and all these houses that didn't sell in the summer are going to just be sitting there for the winter, because nothing out here sells in the winter. And, look out. People have to sell. Anyway, thanks for the call.
It was nice talking to you, Peter. Take care.
Okay. Anyway, we got Todd on the line from Colorado. Go ahead, Todd.
Peter, I also observed Paulson's change in demeanor during the question-answer session. And, not only did he shift into autopilot, but his body language changed. He sat upright and just literally went in, like you said, into an autopilot maneuver.
Yeah, so he looked like a robot.
It was one of the more
automaton. Like all of a sudden, someone flipped, he was talking. He was going about his normal day, and all of a sudden, someone flicked a switch, and he went into this dollar speech.
It's not gonna be long, Peter, and they're gonna have pom poms on that channel. I gotta tell you, Peter, I live in a little boutique ski town in Colorado, and your segment about 2 weeks ago when you mentioned real estate next to a lake or on a mountain, it could not be more epitomized than this area where I live. I don't care what segment or what you read or whatever, people are emboldened by real estate. They won't part ways, and they refuse to hear that there's any element of risk to real estate whatsoever. And I
everybody believes, yeah. And I, as I said, I talk to people from all over the country. And I said, everybody always says, they'll admit that real estate could go down someplace else, but wherever they happen to own it is where it can't go down. Because there's something unique about, yeah, well, I have a view. No, real estate where you overlook this mountain or where you overlook the lake or the ocean or you have a, whatever it is, they think they can't go wrong. And, you know, when everybody thinks you can't lose, you know, that's when you got to get scared because everybody's on the same side of the trade and everybody's over-leveraged and everybody is overpaid. And everybody who could possibly buy real estate bought it.
I work with a group of traders, and if anybody knows trading, you know, the ships don't sell very well when everyone's on the same side of the trade. And you can't beat that sense into people, including disciplined traders. It is, I've never seen myopia like you see in you know.
But the particular problem with real estate and all the fraud and the appraisals is you've got all these people that own dilapidated, you know, pieces of real estate or, you know, old, you know, where they might have paid, you know, $300,000 or $400,000 for something that just 5 years ago would have sold for $125,000, $150,000, and now they've got a $300,000 or $400,000 mortgage on the place. And they've got it financed with an adjustable rate where they can barely make the payments where they are, let alone where they're going to be when they reset.
Well, the good thing is it's a bull market. It's not inflation. Peter, just wanted to pass along, and I do have to tell you, I am not a client, but anybody you end up with in your office from Aspen, Colorado, is a former client of mine because I got out of the business.
Well, you should become a client, and you should refer us clients.
You've already got at least one, and you got more than that on the way.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to. I don't know what you're holding out, but you must have some reasons.
Very skittish person. As a matter of fact, I got out of business in 01 just primarily because of just the general lack of responsibility most people are willing to accept on their own. And you to step up and take responsibility is far more bold of a step than I'm able to take.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for the referrals. Okay. Anyway, speaking about Euro Pacific Capital, let's play the commercial one last time, and we'll pick up for the final segment, and any of the remaining calls are on hold.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we are back. And again, we've got one caller online. We've still got about 18 minutes left in the show. Anybody want to call? The number is 888-678-9597. That's 888-678-9597. One quick housekeeping note. I know I've been late on the newsletter. I've just had a lot of things I've been working on. And the newsletter will be going out probably before the end of the week. So the fourth edition of The Global Investor should be emailed out this week. If you don't have one, maybe it's because your spam blocker. I know only about a third of them are getting through. We can tell. We send it out two ways. We send out an HTML version and a plain text version with a link. But you definitely want to get this newsletter. There's a lot of good stuff in it. And it's the fourth one in the series. And if you just signed up for the newsletter and you haven't received any, what we do is when you sign up for the newsletter, you automatically get sent the links to all the previous newsletters. So if you sign up today, you'll get the other ones. But if you signed up before that, we just added that feature recently. When you get the newsletter, you'll get links to all the prior newsletters that you might have missed. But make sure you have your spam filters or whatever you've got set to allow the mail from Europe Pacific to go through. We're now sending out about, I think we're sending out close to 30,000 of these newsletters now. I mean, the mailing list is really increasing. We're getting a lot of people visiting the site, signing up for the newsletter. When I first started it, the first issue went out, I think we might have emailed it out to, I don't know, maybe 7,000 or 8,000 people. And it's grown, to almost 30,000 people. But again, all those 30,000 names are not getting it because only about a third of them are getting opened. We got to make sure that more of the emails are getting through. So if you're not getting it, make sure that your filters are letting it through. Anyway, let's go back to the phones. I've got Noah on the line from San Francisco.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. I got two questions. The first is when Paulson was on CNBC on Monday, I don't know if you saw it. He went on Bloomberg about 3 hours later.
No, I didn't see that one. I didn't know about that one.
Yeah, he had a very interesting exchange. I don't know if you can find it. He had an interesting exchange with the interviewer. He was like, the thing you were saying about his, robot back and forth about the dollar, it was even more apparent on this Bloomberg interview. He just refused to talk about it. And then at the end of the interview, the guy went away from talking about the dollar. And then the last question he said, well, Paulson, I know you don't want to talk about the dollar. I have one more question. And he got very, perturbed. He made this big gesture with his arms. It was, if you can find it, it's really amazing.
Who made the gesture, Paulson or the...
Yeah, Paulson, he got, really upset. He said, no, I did talk about the dollar. What are you talking about? And he said the same spiel,
Yeah, he doesn't want to... The only thing they want to do is reiterate those words. That's the extent of their conversation, is that canned, prepared remark. And that's all they'll say. Nothing else. Because the problem is they can't talk about it. Because if they actually had a conversation, people would realize that there's no policy. There's no strong dollar. I mean, I would ask Paulson, okay, if the dollar starts to go down, what are you going to do about it? How are you going to stop it? How are you going to defend it? We're going to raise interest rates. We're going to cut government spending. I mean, what are they going to do? There's nothing they can do.
There was another telltale remark in this interview on Bloomberg also. The guy, I think Tom McKee, asked him, well, listen, have you talked to Bush about the dollar specifically? And he said, no, he hasn't even mentioned the dollar to Bush.
That's the most important thing that you got. How can he not mention it? That's obvious. That's obviously a lie.
It's really amazing. My second question is...
I didn't discuss the dollar with Bush at all during the nomination process. He nominated me for Secretary of the Treasury. We had all these conversations. I've been approved by the Senate. I've been appointed. I've been in my job for a number of weeks. We haven't once mentioned the dollar. It's like, what do you talk about when you get together? Do you talk about girls? it's like ridiculous.
They're logical liars is what we're
talking about. Golf and what kind of beer they like.
My second question is, you're very forthright. You rightly label these Wall Street firms. They're just swindlers. They're crooks. Yeah. Why do they let you on CNBC? I mean, that's their that's their stomping ground. That's their platform to swindle.
Well, CNBC. I mean, look, they're about ratings. They're about they want to appear balanced to the extent they can. And, I'm a good guest. I'm a lively guest. I think on my feet. I think that definitely proves to people that there are a lot of people out there that think that CNBC just won't put people on with my opinion. And that's not true. They put me on all the time. I just think that there's not that many people that have my opinion that also have my platform. Remember, they're just not going to put anybody on. You have to have some type of tie to the financial market. You have to have some kind of soapbox to stand on. You just can't, be a dog catcher and say, I want to go on and say why the U.S. economy is going to fall apart. But if you're actually a brokerage firm and you have clients and you manage money, then, you've got just as much of a valid opinion as somebody else. So
these swindlers, they put you on and you cut these guys to shreds. You're talking about the Diane Swank. She doesn't know what inflation is, Joseph Battipaglia, the guy's a liar, It's really like...
But I don't know that Joe is a lot. I mean, look, I don't know. I mean, obviously, those statements on gold look a little contrived, but...
I'm not saying about gold. I'm talking about the economy. These people, they're...
Well, I don't think they're lying. I just think he doesn't understand. He just doesn't know. I mean, remember, these guys have their background in the U.S. university system, where they went through that, and they get brainwashed by the faculty there that don't know what they're doing, and they go into Wall Street, and... I don't know that these guys, look, I mean, I've met the guy in person many times. He's a nice guy. He's a personable guy. I just think they're mistaken. I think, you know, and when you take a lot of people who are mistaken and you put them in the same room, they feed off each other. You know, I mean, you can take normal, intelligent people and put them in a mob and they become idiots. and that's what's happened. So I don't think it's conspiratorial. I mean, yeah, I do think there are some people, certainly, you know, Alan Greenspan and people that know, and you know, they kept it quiet, you know, and they try to make things work. They don't want to say things, but you know, by and large, most of these people are just completely dumb. They're gonna be blindsided. Not dumb meaning they're not intelligent. They're just clueless about reality.
That's why I call them liars. I mean, maybe not the person Joseph is a liar, but. You know, he's a front man. He's telling you, you know, put your money into these large caps. Put your money into this or that.
That's what they're selling.
But it's so that their boss could, you know, take their money when they, you know, jack up the inflation or cut this economy into shreds, which they're obviously doing.
Yeah. All right. Hey, well, thanks for the call. Are you a client yet?
No, God willing, I have enough money to become a client.
But look, we'll take as little as $1,000. So look, whatever you got, it's not too little to protect it.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, especially now. I mean, get something. I mean, even if you get a little bit of, well, you know, get a little bit of gold or get some stocks, something foreign, because believe me, it'll be worth it.
I'm holding some silver right now, but
yeah.
I hear you. Euro Pacific, I believe you guys are doing it honest.
All right, well, thanks for the call.
God bless you, man.
Okay. Anyway, we've got a couple more callers on the line. Ken calling from New York. How are you handling the heat, Ken? Ken, are you there?
Hear me?
Ken?
Hello?
Who am I speaking to?
You're talking to Ken from Amsterdam, New York.
That's what I thought. Hey, how are you surviving the heat there, Ken?
I'm doing okay, but I'm not getting enough done. It's hard to move.
Yeah.
But it's breaking up right now.
Yeah, that's good. Anyway, what's on your mind tonight?
Well, it's a little off the track of what you guys been talking about, but... I'm interested in your take on the Japanese economy because I'm a big admirer of Japanese manufacturing and their tools and machinery, which I've had some experience with. And I don't know why they're not a good investment. And do you expect...
I'm a big fan of the Japanese economy. I think, you know, Japan is obviously the world's wealthiest creditor nation. They've had their problems as a result of dealing with the aftermath of a stock and a real estate bubble in the 1980s. And I think that they would have dealt with it a lot more effectively had the government not pursued the policies that they did, and had they not been so adamant in their defense of the dollar and their belief that their salvation lie in exports to the United States. That's what actually made their problems worse. But I think, you know, beneath the surface, you've got a very dynamic economy in Japan. They're very hardworking. They have a high savings rate. They have a lot of capital. And I think Japan is going to be a leader.
Out of gold.
But I think their government has done a tremendous disservice to the Japanese economy, and they squandered a lot of wealth. Fortunately for the Japanese, there's still a lot of wealth left in Japan. They didn't squander at all. They're in much better shape than the United States. I mean, a lot of people here in America, they point to Japan as being some kind of economic basket case. And meanwhile, you know, they ignore the fact that we owe them a ton of money, not the other way around. You know, in my opinion, it's the creditor that's the smart one, not the debtor.
Right.
So we're buying them. We're not doing a lot of buying in Japan because I still don't think their best values are in Japanese stocks. I think in many cases they're still expensive relative to some of the stocks we're buying, let's say in Singapore and Hong Kong. But I'm very, very positive on the economy down there long term.
Yeah. Well, if you look at the stuff they make, it's really nice.
They make great stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, they manufacture a lot of stuff abroad, but they still manage to have a huge trade surplus and current account surplus. So
I understand.
They're a wealthy nation. They're going to get wealthier. They're going to be a leader in the global economy. And, you know, they are going to be a bigger economy than the U.S. And there's only there's a much smaller population, but in a few years, the Japanese GDP will be higher than ours because of the exchange rates realignment.
I did hear that their I don't know what to call it. They borrow more than they.
Yeah, they say more. But anyway, I got a couple more guys on hold. So we're going to be running out of time. So let me thank you for the call, so we can get these last two callers in.
Yep. Okay. Thanks
a lot. Let me take Dan from Ohio.
Hello.
Dan, you there?
Yeah. I do see what you mean when you talk about the real estate market falling because of all the housing vacancies here in Geneva. I think part of that is due to high utility costs and the economy and whatever. But I talked to some people that listen to this program, and they say there were many books published on this in the early 80s predicting this economic class would happen, and it didn't, so why should they believe it now?
Well, some of the people that were predicting collapses in the 80s and 90s were doing so for the wrong reason. I read some of those books, and there was a lot of flaws in their logic. There were better books that were written in the 70s that were right on, and a lot of the negative things did happen. We had a big collapse in the 70s as a result of the policies of the 1960s.
Yeah.
We didn't have a total collapse, but a lot of those books were right on, and the investment advice they gave was quite good. But I do think there have been people that have talked about these problems prematurely, or not necessarily prematurely, but they saw them so far in advance, so early, that basically the fact that it's taken so long kind of discredited their thinking, but their thinking was right on. But I think that the problems that have been developing for all these years are finally to a point where there's nothing left that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, you know, there are people that can say, look, you know, if I'd have followed all the gloom and doom advice that I've ever heard, you know, but unfortunately, you know, this is the time that you got to listen to it, because I think now it's really about to happen. And I think the evidence is now overwhelming that this is going to happen, because I think we've run out of rope. You know, I think, you know, we've always had another fix. We've always found another Visa to pay our MasterCard. But I think it's now so extreme and so dramatic that there really is no way to postpone it, with another, you know, fix. Anyway, thanks for the call. If you want, I know I have one more caller on. Do I still have Harold online? I think I have one more caller, so I want to take the last call. And if you want, call me again next week at the top of the program if you have another question.
Okay, thanks again.
Thanks a lot for the call. Now let's take the last call. No more calls. We're running out of time. I've got Harold, who's been patiently waiting online from Colorado. Go ahead, Harold.
Peter, just a comment. Number one, a good show. Just a comment on the value of buying gold and silver instead of the Dow since July 2003. I've been buying gold and silver, but I've been keeping track of if I would have put the same amount of money into Dow instead of gold and silver. My portfolio of gold and silver has returned 7.1 times more than if it would have been invested in the Dow.
Well, sure. If you go back to the peak of the Dow in 2000, the Dow was worth about 43 ounces of gold.
Correct.
And the Dow was worth something like 17 ounces of gold. So the Dow has lost more than half its value relative to gold. Now, the Dow has paid some dividends, but they've been puny compared to that decline.
Right. But the return is magnificent if you just take the value, putting it into the gold and silver.
Well, it's going to be like that for many, many years. You know, you had two periods in the last century where the Dow went from 20-plus ounces of gold to one. It did that in the 1930s, and it did that in the 1970s. And it's probably going to do it again, which would mean, you know, Dow 10,000 gold 10,000, Dow 5,000, gold 5,000, or it could be Dow 20,000, gold 20,000.
Right, right.
It doesn't matter where the numbers are, just that they become one-to-one again.
And one other question.
A chance that it'll happen. Yeah.
Peter, the M3 that they're no longer reporting, isn't M3 a liability on the federal, on the Fed's?
The M3 is just the largest, the most broadest definition of money supply, which includes a lot of other deposits, which, you know, I only have 30 seconds. So call me next week and I'll answer that question.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back again next week. Remember, visit the website at www.europac.net. Sign up for the newsletter, The Global Investor. We're getting an issue out in a couple of days. Read my research reports. Call the office to open up an account, 800-727-7922. See you. Talk to you all again next week. Thanks for listening. So long.